Big show coming for you today. We've got NFL Network's Patrick Claibon to join me to preview free agency. And man, there's a lot to get to. We do talk about the Deebo Samuel trade up at the top, and we bring in our what's he got left meter. Full tank, 50-50 on the gas, or are we running towards E? Deebo's a great player to put that through. Then we get into quarterbacks, we get into running backs, we get into wide receivers, and why I actually kind of think it's a nice offseason to need offensive linemen with this free agency class. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Tuesday, March 4th. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. I am Matt Harmon, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me to do just that is, I say sometimes at the beginning of the show, you know, it's my good friend. And to be honest, I mostly always mean that. I mostly always mean that it's my good friend. Mostly, but sometimes, let's be honest, it's an industry proximity associate. Today, I am joined by one of my actual good friends, NFL Network's Patrick Claibon. Claibon, what's going on, buddy?
Not much, man. Glad to see you. Glad to be, in that qualifier, which it puts those who don't fall into that in a tough spot. But it's really not that tough, because how many like actual friends, like really close friends, do people have that work in the same industry? I think we're lucky in that, like, this industry comes with a, hey, people like the same things, and like, mm-hmm. these people are halfway decent, and so it makes it, but like
halfway
for other places, like if you're going to corpo job 3.0 in Sheboygan and it's like, yeah, this is my close friend and I work with him, people are like, I don't know, man.
Get a
like
life.
You're making that up. But we don't have to lie about it. So that's cool. Shout out to that.
No, shout out to that. And yeah, halfway decent is a good qualifier. I'll fall into halfway decent in terms of this whole thing. So
more so, more than halfway.
Three quarters, 75%
decent. 100%. Matt Harmon is 100% decent. For anybody that's listening to this already knows that. But if my word means anything, which it doesn't, 100%.
I appreciate you, buddy. It's a funny story, but we're going to get into the show here in just a second. But now that we're riffing on friendship, I was lucky enough to do like my first big boy NFL Network TV hit with you, like not talking fantasy, talking regular NFL stuff. Like the first non-fantasy thing I did on the network was with you on what I'm sure was like a three times over, you know, RIP show up to the minute. Do you know the one note I got after the live situation there? The one note I got from the producer was, "Hey, that was great. You actually did better than we expected," which I kind of took as like a half compliment. They were like, "Just you can't call Patrick Claibon on air, because like you just have to call him Patrick." So I'm gonna call you Claibon the entire show, because that's what I call you in real life on this show, because this is my show. But I thought that was a funny little story.
Yeah, I will take anything. I've actually forgotten because like you said, you know, up to the minute has been killed and resurrected so many times in so many different formats that you forget. But yeah, that was us back in the day. What was that? Was that like
17? I think that was
17.
Maybe 17, 18, maybe 18.
That's
I don't know.
That's bananas. But it's even. But here we are. Like here we are, and I am joining you on your vehicle, where I will call you Matt sometimes and Harmon sometimes, just because I can't keep things straight. But it's good to be back with you, Matt. Well, long story short.
Good to be back with you. And yeah, 2017, 2018 is actually a good transition to our subject of the day, because that's when most of these guys that we're going to be talking about were in their primes. So it's 2017, 2018. We obviously did all of our combine coverage last week. It was absolutely a blast to be in Indianapolis. I'm still not fully recovered from the lack of sleep from being at the NFL scouting combine, but we're going to put the draft season discussion sort of kind of on pause for these next few weeks here, because free agency is hitting. Things are happening as we are speaking. The dominoes are falling. So today's pod, we're going to basically focus on a free agency preview. We're going to try to look at these offensive skill position players, maybe some offensive linemen along the way. And we're going to look at how much gas some of these guys have in the tank, because let's be honest, most of the top skill position players available in free agency and on the trade market are, like I said, 2017, 2018, that was their prime. I'm being a little facetious, but some of these guys are on the wrong side of 30, which is Claibon and I discussed before the show. a little bit insulting because both of us are way on the wrong side of 30 at this point and way in physically decline. But nevertheless, we're going to move forward. But before we do that, we have a couple of pieces of news to get to since we've last spoken. And I think this first one is a perfect candidate for our gas left tiers. Deebo Samuel traded to the Washington Commanders for a fifth round pick. Couple of notes. Washington is assuming his entire contract and San Francisco takes a 30 plus million dead cap charge. Deebo was tweeting yesterday. It seemed like they left on pretty good terms, which is always nice to see. I always like to see that, Claybon. But when you first saw this news, what was your first reaction?
Well, I immediately thought about the Peters connection, right? And the front office, the relationships there, him being intimately aware of what Debo's limitations are and abilities as a football player, and the way the middle of the field works with Jaden Daniels, right? Those two things where if you have a quarterback that is not Jaden Daniels, you have a set of limitations that maybe need a little bit more from Deebo Samuel. You get in situations where you're going to need him to separate. This stage of Jaden Daniels, you can have Deebo be late stage Deebo Samuels and still be a contributing factor. Cause I know like there's the incident, like it's kind of the theme of what we're talking about today. Guys get to a certain point, you get banged up. Like Deebo was playing a whole lot of running back snaps. He's just had a lot of contact over the course of his career. And we instantly want to take people who are hurt and say that they are washed. We saw that conversation go out with Austin Eckler, who had incentives in his contract. He had to play. He was hurt. And so it's like, is this player hurt or has this player gone through such a significant physical decline that they can't contribute anymore? I think Deebo was hurt. And I feel confident that this isn't some overinvestment. This is still a player who can contribute in the right situation. And I think this is the perfect situation for him.
Yeah, I kind of called my shot on this one a few podcast episodes ago and said that this was the spot Deebo was going to land in. And I thought it made sense because of the Peters connection, a lot of the schematic reasons that you outlined there. I will say I've gone back and started charting some Deebo Samuel for reception perception, even pre-pneumonia. It's not a great product. it's not a great product on film and listen, he's never been a traditional man coverage separator. That's just always been who he is, but we're in pretty dangerous territory with him now once we get the final sample in the books here. But even so, like, who cares? Even if he is a severely declining player, which I think he is, I think he can still be useful to this team. And it's a fifth round pick, and this team is one of the many teams, Claybon, that has just an ungodly amount of cap space, just more cap space than they could possibly spend this offseason. So if you assume a guy that you kind of have a clear vision, a clear role for him in an offense that was top three, I think, in wide receiver screens last year, which is how you're going to want to use Deebo Samuel. I think even if he is, and to me, if we're putting him on the tiers here, full tank, ready to rock 50-50, this could go either way or on E, like getting pretty close. I think he's running pretty close to the end here. I still think that's totally fine to make this trade.
Yeah, it's a question of what were you going to get with the fifth round pick, right? In terms of value, if you're evaluating the trade, do you consider it a loss if you take a wide receiver in the fifth round and he ultimately has Deebo's contributions this year? I understand the money. It's not our money, right? That's the first thing that we need to establish. It's not our money. This is not money that's going to go to schools or hospitals. This is a professional sports franchise, right? And so like the money goes to Deebo. The contributions that would have come from a fifth round pick, a wide receiver, learning the game, going through, meeting people, learning the offense, have to go. It's the standard that we would feel about that fifth round pick. I believe the outcomes from Deebo Samuel will supersede that, whoever it was. Ultimately in the fifth round, especially at wide receiver, there's, you know, it's hard to pick based off of need. Like, we understand that whole draft process that the player is not usually there that you need at that particular point. And so I think Deebo can contribute, and he can contribute and be a meaningful part of this offense, even with the growth that you saw in some spots of that receiving core late in the season. It adds something that they did not have, which is the goal, right? It's the goal in acquiring talent in the NFL. What can you do that nobody else can do? And still, there's not a lot. There's not a lot of guys who present this particular skill set. And of course, you're not getting prime Deebo, but you get a version of Deebo that 3, 4, 5 games in a season can make the plays that ultimately make the difference.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think this precludes them from adding a receiver in the draft either. I think it gets a little bit tight when we talk about last year. It was on my radar that the Texans had too many guys to get the ball to. The Bears absolutely had too many guys to get the ball to. You know, when you start to get to, we've got two former Pro Bowlers and a top 10 pick and a rookie quarterback to try to distribute that, that's problematic, I think. That can get to like, all right, we're going to have egos in play. We're going to have this type of stuff. Well, I think you can add somebody that's not quite in the clear-cut starter tier. Like I said, maybe a second-round rookie, third-round rookie, maybe more of a true perimeter guy that can take some of that away from Debo as time wears on. I think that totally is possible. So from a fantasy perspective, I'm not going to find myself itching to draft Debo Samuel this year, but I like the move from a commander standpoint.
I think from a fantasy perspective, the thing to watch is if in weeks one or two, where Debo gets those screens from the 8 to the 15 and gets in the end zone a couple of times, there's going to be a great trade high opportunity, perhaps early on in the season. If you do take a late round flyer on Debo, you get a couple of touchdowns, go ahead and cash that ticket because I don't think that is something that can be sustained. Whereas you get that week two boost. I mean, people were flying out, right? And I struggle to think of his name every single time. The Chiefs running back with the porn star name, that was like, oh God, we got to go get, and I literally cannot remember his name in this moment, Matt, but it was like a fantasy fury to go get this piece. And then it's like, oh yeah, Kareem Hunt's a better football player. And then he comes back and you never hear from, again, completely blanking on his name, but that's the type of fury.
I can't remember either. Oh, Carson Steele.
Yes, Carson Steele.
By the way, I was one of the idiots that burned a bunch of fab on the white dude with the 40 and the long hair. I mean, he just that's complete fullback core, and I'm an idiot that burned fab bucks on him. So whatever. Nobody's perfect. Hey, last thing on the Debo Samuel thing. I think we can all agree now when your favorite draft analyst gives a bad, you know, hey, this prospect, he compares to Debo Samuel. Let's all agree now that they're probably referring to the Debo Samuel that we just outlined and not the historically efficient 2021 football player that we're never, ever going to see again.
Yeah, you know, my relationship with player comps is difficult as like from the standard. But yeah, the Debo comp has always been crazy, and it's a lot to put on people. It's like, oh yeah, this guy can play two positions in the National Football League at a very high level. Like, okay, like, so are we gonna, anytime somebody takes defensive snaps in college, they're gonna be Travis Hunter now? Like, let's stop that. Let's not do that. The Debo comps were crazy, but yeah, if you're gonna make it, that's the guy we're talking about.
In one single season, you're going to be the most efficient downfield receiver and the most efficient yards after catch receiver. Never, ever, ever going to happen again. It never, ever happened again for Debo Samuel. That's where we're at. Okay, one little final piece of cleanup news here, just because this just happened. The Rams are in the process of sending a veteran offensive lineman, Jonah Jackson, to the Chicago Bears in exchange for a 2025 sixth-round pick, according to ESPN's Courtney Cronin. You know, they're going to assume the entire contract here again. So this is just, the Bears have to do something on the interior offensive line. I actually think this offensive line free agency class is not that bad, which is damning with faint praise here. But still, they need their entire interior remade here. And this is somebody who has familiarity with the Chicago Bears head coach, Ben Johnson.
Yeah, it's in terms of like facilitating that particular talent, like the need is so clearly there in Chicago, where they have to make those moves up front. And for the Rams, it's really just about trying to do what they can to continue the success that they've had, where it's kind of relative to other teams' accomplishments and also failures in the division, right? They keep that going, and you just look through and trying to do the obvious thing, which I think both teams really needed to do here.
Yeah, absolutely. The Rams have some big strikeouts over, you know, the last like few years, but hey, if you keep on winning, nobody really cares, and if you you know, you do enough good things, it doesn't really matter. But yeah, one more piece of news here too. Davante Adams just released. We'll get to him when we talk the wide receivers here in the free agency, but just wanted to hit that off the top that he was released. So nice. We want to get a trade partner for Davante Adams. You're not getting a trade partner for a $30 million cap hit. And they get a lot of savings out of that move, too. So good for the Jets. By the way, also, I don't know if you saw, Patrick, but they gave Alan Lazard permission to seek a trade. So
How nice of them.
How nice.
To allow Alan Lazard his right to go out there and see, like, hey, are you maybe thinking about bringing in 12/8? He is my friend. And so maybe I could be his friend on this team as well.
Recruitment pitch there. If you're thinking about bringing in Aaron Rodgers, you can also think about bringing in me. So that's a pretty nice move. Real classy. I know you love this, Patrick. Real classy move by the Jets to give him permission to seek a trade. Let's talk quarterbacks here. Let's move into our free agency discussion and start off with the quarterbacks. I'm just going to list off the names. You tell me some guys that stand out here. Sam Darnold, Justin Fields, Russell Wilson, Daniel Jones, Jameis Winston, Mac Jones. And then, of course, we are at some point going to get into this group, Aaron Rodgers, who's 41 years old, and Kirk Cousins, 37-year-old, because those guys are obvious cut candidates. The Browns are probably going to try to trade Kirk Cousins. Nobody's going to take on that contract. They're still trying to sell, that was a Freudian slip. The Falcons are going to try to... We're on the same page here. The Falcons are going to try to trade Kirk Cousins. Nobody's going to take on that contract. They're still trying to say, hey, he could be our backup this year. No, he can't. So obviously, Sam Darnold's the highlight member here. We've gotten word today, yesterday, that Sam Darnold's not going to get franchised by the Vikings. When you're looking at this list, is it basically Sam Darnold and everybody else, or does somebody else stand out to you as a potential interesting reclamation project?
Well, everybody else on the list, like I don't think that 2-3 years comes into the equation other than Sam Darnold. Everybody else is a 1 year kind of take it and go, see how it goes. And I understand those last two games of 2024 were like, oh my gosh, buyer beware on Sam Darnold. But it's very difficult for me in my mind to throw out the 89% of the season that happened prior to that, where Sam Darnold was an effective and good quarterback in terms of making the decisions that just kind of went out of the window against the Lions and against the Rams. And so, like, ultimately, I think it's Sam Darnold kind of in a tier by himself in terms of maybe not direct financial investment in 2025, but on down the road in making those kind of commitments. The Kirk Cousins to the Browns thing feels a little too obvious to me, in terms of a franchise that you could argue made one of the worst financial decisions in NFL history, and a quarterback who was clearly not ready to play a full NFL season, significant, because people compare the Rodgers and Cousins Achilles tears; those happened months apart.
Yeah,
it's a significant injury and recovery to go through, and so Kirk Cousins had those peaks where it's like, oh, this is Kirk Cousins. And then clearly an injured football player trying to deal with multiple things, and your body compensates, and it didn't work out. And fortunately for the Falcons, they had a questionable decision in signing Kirk Cousins, but they go and get Michael Penix Jr. and that all works out for the future. But now there's a situation for both Cousins and the Browns where they really need each other. And so that feels obvious to me. And going down to the Steelers decision where Ian Rappaport reported this week, it's more likely Fields. That makes sense as well. If it's Fields and a rookie quarterback, they wonder if you're still kind of kicking the can down the road and ultimately still looking for this position where you're going to eventually need to make a move to try to get somebody that can be kind of a long-term starter at the position. But there's been so much in terms of draft and investment over the past few years in the quarterback position. There's this dwindling where it's really only one or two guys every single year, and you're not having a whole lot of viable guys reach the market, which makes sense. Even though there's guys like Jameis Winston that could come in and win some games, and, you know, of course it's going to be hilarious and rife with a few mistakes, but it's watchable, where you go back a few years and, you know, the Brock Osweilers, the Brian Hoyers of the world, like it was... we've gone through some dark times with the position and things are relatively well now compared to back then.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see who signs Jameis, just because if it's a situation where he can get on the field, like I called it last year with the Browns, it was like a pump and dump scheme. You know, Jerry Jeudy, distressed asset, He was like 44th among wide receivers in receiving yards. He launches into the top five with Jameis there. And then it predictably the market crashes as soon as Jameis gets. I don't know anything about economics if the people out there can't tell. But that is what it sounds like. It sounds like a pump and dump scheme. Jameis comes in there, pumps up the numbers, gets out of there. It all goes to hell. So, I mean, could he do that with Garrett Wilson with the Jets next year? You know, someone along that lines. I think it's very possible. It's something at least on my radar. I want to go back to Sam Darnold. Do you have a favorite Darnold landing spot?
The potential Darnold landing spots have kind of fallen away. So the Rams navigate that process and Stafford navigates the process where it's like, well, there's really no better spot for either one of us. Like we have to keep this thing going. And so that goes by the wayside. And now you're in a situation where is it a return to MetLife for Sam Darnold, but not playing for the Jets? Like, is that the most reasonable thing? And I know that there's folks out there that would think, because you could say the same situation for Dimes as well, going back there. And it's like, is New Jersey the problem? Because it's in New Jersey. The stadium's not in New York. Either way.
Too much baggage. If I'm Danny Dimes, I don't want to be back in New York. I don't need that in my life. I want to go somewhere a little more quiet. You know, little real estate market, maybe a little bit easier. I just think you're a little too close to the ghosts of your past there.
And ghosts, a perfect segue for Sam. Who all of those particular demons are mostly gone, right? There's been significant change in New York where the Giants front office is completely different. It's not even the same Giants from when he was playing in MetLife, right? Playing for the right. Jets. It's really with Shane and Dabal, right? A circumstance where this may be it. This may be it. And so if you're going to get that option, it might have to be the best option. And we saw what Kevin O'Connell could do for Sam Darnold. And there's plenty of tape on what made it go wrong, but there's also plenty of tape of what made it go right. And so if you want to, there's that option of trading up, maybe getting a signal caller, maybe doing it that route, but also having Sam Darnold in place, because I don't think the number is going to be bananas. I think you take those last two games away, the number might have gotten into the bananas category. I don't think it's going to be a particular thing that's going to hamstring your team for four or five, like the Dimes deal did. To be perfectly honest with you, it's not going to hamstring your team for a couple of years. But when you're out of that, I think New York is probably the best spot for Sam Darnold, oddly enough.
Yeah, I think he gets maybe like a Baker Mayfield contract, which is totally fine. You know, they've been able to operate and bring in guys with Baker Mayfield there. I like the Giants spot. You know, I've also thought too, when people have kind of nobody's seriously floated the return to the New York Jets. But in addition to the fact that I don't think I think there's just that's too much baggage to go back to the Jets. Also the new head coach, Aaron Glenn, is one of the guys that put Sam Darnold in the blender, you know, so I don't think he'd be like, oh yeah, I'm itching to get that guy on my team after I, turned him back to old Sam Darnold in week 18 or whatever. I think the Raiders are still in play. Although I tend to think that if Brady's pulling the strings there, Darnold is not necessarily like a Brady type of quarterback, whatever that means. I also think who is though?
That's my question. Like if Tom is going to set the standard as himself, like who's going to be good enough?
So far, all we've heard is that he likes Shedeur Sanders, which, you know, I don't know. Sanders has said he's modeled his game off of Tom Brady at times too. That's about the best indicator we've got as to what a Tom Brady quarterback is. I think another spot that we have to talk about, which is kind of like tangential to the whole Giants thing, which I think the Titans. I know there's coaches on that staff that really like Sam Darnold and are very excited that he is on the open market. I think my prediction is he either ends up a Titan and then they trade down with the Giants, or vice versa. He ends up with the Giants, Titans stick and pick at one and take Cam Ward. So if I had to guess, like if I'm calling shots here, I think Cam Ward, Sam Darnold, both of those guys are in Titan and Giant uniforms, and I'm just not sure which direction is which.
Yeah, just one way or the other. I think that if it's that first option, then you end up with a Levis Darnold quarterback situation in Tennessee.
Oh boy.
Is that concerning to you in any particular manner?
So I had somebody tell me at the combine that part of me is like, how serious is this really? Like that the coaching staff does still really like Will Levis and they just wish he was a little less himself.
Will Levis?
Yeah. No, they're like, Will, if you could just get out of your own way, you would be a really good starting quarterback. But that is kind of the exact vibe at which they approach Will Levis, and I think they actually feel like Will has the personality to just settle into the backup quarterback role and not be like a jackass about it. So I think that can actually work out fine.
Yeah, and which is really what we want out of a backup quarterback. You want a talented, high variance guy.
Yeah,
who in like there's some situations you put the backup in there, you're not winning the game. Maybe right. You do. Maybe you do with Will Levis. Maybe he goes in there, makes some plays, runs around, throws the ball backwards over his head for a touchdown. That's what you're looking for, or you have Mitch Trubisky, right? And you give him $3 million to be Mitch Trubisky. Like, what are we talking about?
Let's talk through the two old guys here. Like, I mean, older fellas, the obvious cut candidates, because you mentioned like the Achilles bros here in Aaron Rodgers and Kirk Cousins. And I think it's a good point to, and I said this a lot last year, that we grouped these guys together, Rodgers and Cousins, because they had the same injury,
right?
But one happened much earlier, as you mentioned, with Rodgers. That was right away in week one. Cousins, it happened in deep into October, I believe, of 2023. And, you know, that kind of tracks, Claybon, because the last four games, Rodgers actually had some pretty damn decent moments. You know, the Jaguars game was really good. The season finale, Miami, he throws four touchdowns. Like there were moments down the stretch for Rodgers. So let's put him on the scale here. How much does Rodgers have left if we're talking, again, full tank, he's ready to rock, 50-50, could go either way, or he's on E? We're running on fumes here.
I don't think we're running on fumes. The question is the full Aaron Rodgers experience where he's picking the offensive coordinator, he's picking multiple pieces of the offense, he's making decisions about it. Of course, the quarterback is going to have say over how an individual play call operates, but that level of power, I don't think a franchise is going to commit to that, nor do I think they should, because even when we got the previous MVP renditions of Aaron Rodgers, there was that push and pull with Matt LaFleur regarding how to run that particular offense and what they wanted to do in Green Bay, right? So if there is a version of Aaron Rodgers that is willing, right, to just run the offense the way that the offense was designed pre-Aaron Rodgers, if he can take his hands and tentacles out of the playbook and out of the front office, then yeah, Aaron Rodgers can play. He could be a functional quarterback in the National Football League. It's a question of, is that something that he's interested in 2025? And how interested is he going to be in that? And if he's not, I have concerns about a team that would be willing to bring in Aaron Rodgers and do all of those other things and allow him to have all of that control, and what that says about the front office and the franchise itself, where it's a delicate thing to have to balance, where the number of teams I think that will be interested in how much ever of Aaron Rodgers is left, that would kind of make it dicey, where it's like, is it a Pittsburgh Steelers team that says, Aaron, this is what we are doing. This is how we are going to do it. Whether you want to be in is up to you, and try to get that decision, I guess, by FaceTime, because he doesn't do phone calls or text messages. It has to be FaceTime, where you get him, you get some self-help guru, grifter or whatever to convince him about it and go for it that way. Otherwise, I just, the days of Aaron, being Aaron, using that explosive, lower body and upper body, right? To do the things that very few people who have ever touched a football are capable of doing. We're not getting that, but you can get 65% of Aaron Rodgers, which is better than 85% of the quarterbacks in the NFL.
Yeah, I think he's a squarely 50-50 guy to me. I think you can definitely still get a functional starter out of him. It's just all the rest of the stuff. And the problem with the Giants rumors that are out there is I think that is a two-way desperation street. Like, that is a marriage of pure desperation. Those boys in New York, Shane and Daboll, are on the hot seat. Like, and they're obviously on the hot seat. When the owner comes out and, you know, says to the media, basically, like, I don't know if I really wanted to bring these guys back, and I'm pissed off about where the team is, which, by the way, John Mara, you've got a hand in that. That is your responsibility too. You're on the hot seat, okay? And then obviously Rodgers, I don't think he's going to have a lot of suitors out there. So that makes me nervous about the whole, okay, how much are they going to bend to Rodgers? How much are they going to structure the offense around Rodgers? And I don't necessarily think Daboll is like the most flexible fella in the world either.
No, that relationship, because we've seen multiple, and again, like with Wink, right? There's been the blowups with Tyrod a couple of years ago, where I don't know if there's a lot of people in the NFL that would have like a blow up, an incident where Tyrod Taylor's like, you know what, I'm done, I'm good,
yeah.
on that, and that kind of that one kind of stood out to me. And of course, people grow and their ability to relate and learn about how to interact with people. And I'm not saying that there's this huge deficiency with Brian Daboll, but with particularly Aaron Rodgers, I don't see a situation where that doesn't like catastrophically erupt into something that's a significant problem for a team that's had significant problems, right? So that's why it feels a little bit dicey to me in a situation like Pittsburgh, because I know we do the whole Mike Tomlin and these wide receivers are crazy and he makes them okay. Like, I know we do that a lot, but I do think the situation is a lot more stable there and a lot more structured, in that you wouldn't give into this like, oh, Aaron wants this, oh, well, we're doing that. It's, hey, we're doing this, would you like to do this part of this with us? Whereas in New York, like you said, it's just a coalition of desperate people. And like, what belief do we take from that, other than these people are willing to do anything and try anything?
Kirk Cousins, do we agree he's pretty close to the E?
Yeah. Here's the thing. He was very hurt last season. And it's not like Kirk Cousins is, you know, we haven't seen like off-season training video of Kirk Cousins, you know, doing power cleans onto a 40-inch box, right? That's not his game. Like, he's never been that guy. You do need some level of athleticism, which we saw he did not have last season. But it's closer to E, right, than we think that, like an Aaron Rodgers is. Even though we saw those peaks where you take those games against the Bucks and you put them on the screen and it's like, oh, that guy, like this guy could play in the NFL for years. But the problem is there was a whole lot of other tape that Kirk Cousins put out there last season. So it's not E. And I do think that Kirk Cousins and a Browns offense where I've had some Stefanski questions, like the decisions to start some quarterbacks have been weird. And I don't know how much, you know, Jimmy Haslam played into those decisions and what kind of power Kevin Stefanski had. Because it wasn't just with Deshaun Watson. It was also going back where Baker was clearly hurt. Like, there wasn't a question. Like, he could barely function out there on the field and he kept getting run out there. And so it's, I do think that Stefanski and Cousins can work. But I don't think, we're thinking 3 years is something where Kirk Cousins is still going to be playing football.
I think we're thinking benched by week 10 for a rookie is what we're thinking with Kirk Cousins.
I mean, it's a possibility. It's always going to be a possibility, but we've just seen so much in terms of success, and guys are able to play longer into their careers. You know, as the rules have changed and medical technology improves a little bit as time goes on. Where I'm not thinking bench by week 10. If he's playing, Matt, okay. if he's actually playing and he's healthy, I think Kirk Cousins could contribute in a whole lot of different spots. And I think Cleveland's the one. I'm pinning my flag in that.
All right. Well, you're a braver man than me. You're a bigger Kirk Cousins fan, Patrick Claybon.
First time. Put it on my epitaph. Kirk Cousins fan. That's it.
There we go. All right. We're gonna take a quick break. When we come back, we'll start talking through some running backs, some receivers. Maybe get into some tight ends right after this. All right, we're back. Let's move into some running backs. I'm going to throw out some players here in this class, which is, it is what it is. Aaron Jones is the headliner here at age 30. Had a pretty strong start to the season, kind of faded in the back end. Najee Harris, age 27. J.K. Dobbins, Rico Dowdle, Nick Chubb, Javonte Williams, Ty Johnson, who Josh Allen called the best third down back in the NFL and actually was a super efficient pass catcher, so he's got to be on the list here, and Kareem Hunt, who led one of the most inefficient running games to make the Super Bowl in NFL history. All right, so Claybon, I throw these names out here to you. I'm going to throw it to you this way. Last year, one of the stories of the offseason was these big name veteran running backs going to great teams and elevating already very good rushing ecosystems. Your Saquon Barkley's, your Josh Jacobs, your Derrick Henry's. Don't necessarily have anyone like that in this class, but if you could pick one, maybe two names out of this group that you could get behind as like a starter for another team, any here, or am I being too tepid about this class?
I think, would we say tepidity? I think if we're trying to make that the form of it, yeah, it's warranted with regards to this particular class. Aaron Jones on the field, great. You're dealing with injury concerns again. That's the entire league. That's league wide. Every single player in the NFL is going to deal with injuries. There are no Wolverines. There are no accelerated healing factors. Everybody's going to deal with it. But it's a question of how much Aaron Jones you can get. I do think, If we're talking running backs, you have to examine the entire situation and so who still has that burst and who has the ability. I think when we saw like late stage Ben Roethlisberger and early stage Najee Harris in Pittsburgh, you saw a lot of his receiving ability. Now, a lot of these were hopeless missions that he was getting sent on by his aging quarterback and he piled up those catches. But we have seen the receiving opportunity for Najee Harris has not really existed. Post Ben. And so he could contribute in that factor where I think he's the best back and a value within this class because you're not going to have to pay extensive. Other than that, of course, it's not, you know, three guys who have led the NFL in rushing, right? In the Jacobs and Henry and Saquon type class of players. I am glad that those guys collectively have kind of been able to boost the feeling that we see with value at the position and hopefully it can be restored to normalcy, right? When Bijan and Jahmyr Gibbs and those guys come up, right? Where the pay will kind of return to what it was compared to the rest of the league, but to where these guys who are significant values on offense aren't being a guy that's getting 50% of your touches, but like 5% of the money. Like that shouldn't be happening anymore. Thanks to those guys' continued efforts. But yeah, in terms of contributing, Aaron Jones can still contribute. I think Najee Harris is probably, if he finds the right spot, would probably be the best value pick out of this group. Rico Dowdle, we saw a team that seemed like it wasn't interested in running the football through the offseason and into the season, where Rico kind of got going and kind of changed that as things got a little bit better in Dallas. He could contribute as well. But it's not just, right, that Najee and Rico fall into that particular age circumstance where it's like, oh, we could see two or three more years of this guy. It's the explosion that you saw just in spots where I know it wasn't necessarily there for Najee in this season, but there hasn't been this, oh, this there was this particular injury. There was this setback. It truly was the offense itself that had problems that a running back just aren't going to be able to fix.
So if you're putting Najee Harris on the scale here in terms of the tiers, you're a lot closer to like full tank with him.
Oh, yeah. I do think it's a full tank because where has the opportunity been? Like where has this wide open Pittsburgh Steelers offense been that Najee Harris is the problem that's keeping them from being successful? I just don't think that we've seen that. And even when like you got like the idea that Jaylen Warren was giving you something that Najee wasn't necessarily giving you, I just haven't seen the difference in outcomes for both of those players where you say that I don't think that either one of them has been able to fully showcase what they're capable of in the NFL.
Yeah, I don't think that Najee Harris is all that great of a fit for, you know, I think from a fantasy perspective, people talked about like, oh, Arthur Smith's just going to love big backed, like, Najee Harris. It's like, I still think Arthur Smith can call a good offense, but I actually don't think he's like Najee's all that good of a fit for kind of that outside zone stuff that, no. I mean, that they want to do. And I mean, that's what people miss about Derrick Henry, another big brawling back. but they were able to get him rolling on those outside zone runs in Tennessee because he could build up that head of steam. And once he gets the head of steam at the line of scrimmage, I mean, it's all over. That's not Najee Harris. He's more of like a true grinder back. So if you think he's got that sort of level like left to contribute as a starting back, and I agree with you about the receiving stuff, it is kind of funny that people are like, well, big question with him is, can he catch passes? We actually saw him catch a load of very empty calorie passes. I get it. Nobody's pitching Najee Harris as the next Christian McCaffrey or something like that, but he certainly has a pair of hands that he can get around the football in like outlet situations. So if you're looking at Najee, is there a maybe like a more of a gap heavy run team that you think he could actually fit with?
Well, it ultimately depends on how that team is going to go about this process, because it is going to be, I think, in terms of how much money you devote, right? And I don't know what ultimately what Mike Vrabel is going to want to do in New England, right? But that is a spot where I think the growth of Drake May, you need a running back that can do the things that Najee does. And I think it's really his greatest skill set is catching the ball. I think like in terms of size and just the target for a quarterback to throw to, where we didn't necessarily get to see him in any other situation other than dump off passes, where New England's got all of this money available. They can spend some on a running back. And if we're talking like a gap scheme.
Well, I mean, if you're talking about the Patriots with Josh McDaniels as the offensive coordinator now, like that was what they did so well with Josh Jacobs the year he led the league in rushing. Obviously, they had Davante Adams as like the clear out, not clear out guy, but you know, he was getting so much cover too that Jacobs could just run into all those light boxes, and they ran a ton of gap scheme runs that year that he led the league in rushing. So I think that McDaniels could pull that off. And you're right to point out like they get so much just an absurd amount of cap space. I'd also throw, so, and the Patriots, by the way, last year were fifth in terms of percentage of gap runs according to Fantasy Points data. So it, obviously it's different coaching staff, but at least if they retain any of those linemen that they probably shouldn't, they've got familiarity he's got familiarity in the gap scheme situation.
I was gonna say 0-for-5, but they rotated so many, it's like just none. Just none, not just five, like any of the nine that they played last year. It's tough to think if they're coming back.
Well, Ramondre Stevenson and Najee Harris, that would be a bit of a nightmare committee situation from the fantasy perspective, but who cares?
Not great for
again,
us.
The Patriots have an absurd amount of cap space. They might as well spend it somewhere. I actually don't hate that landing spot. Rico Dowdle is the guy that I want to highlight here. You mentioned, you said this really well, he kind of changed the outlook for the Cowboys run game late in the season. He had these monster games in upset wins and like carrying the entire load. Once they kind of phased Zeke Elliott out there, Rico showed he can carry big workloads. He can be that type of running back for a team here. And I mean, it sounds like Dallas is going to let him test the market. It is a sort of kind of new coaching staff. It's definitely a new run game coordinator with Clayton Adams and kind of owning that part of the offense. So maybe they just don't see him as a fit there, but he's the right type of running back where even if we think Najee Harris has more to give here, he's definitely handled a lot of touches over the course of his career. Dowdle is a bit more fresh even at the same age of 27.
Yeah, and it's a good spot for him to get out. I'm thinking like an Arizona Cardinals type situation where you've got an aging James Conner who's still able to produce in the league. And I know they've got a solid group of backups like Amari DiMicardo and all these. But you can
– Yeah, RIP to my Trey Benson Dynasty teams. But, you know, that would be pretty killer.
Yeah, and it's – there's teams that need – that type of contribution from Rico Dowdle, where I know that, you know, Dallas is in a circumstance where they're crime poor a lot of the times. So you could resolve some of that and squeeze in an extra $10, $15 million a year if you didn't take every single contract up to the very last moment and sign some of the top players in the league at absolute top player money. You could sign guys early and not necessarily be in this circumstance where you're having to see talent like Rico Dowdle leave, like Amari Cooper when he still had time and viability left, leave and go be successful somewhere else. But that's the situation where somebody is going to get a contributing player and get depth at the position that could help the Cowboys, where it's pick your spot. I mean, pick your spot with Rico Dowdle. I really think he can contribute in a lot of different spots. And I don't think it's that necessarily scheme dependent.
Yeah, I actually think the Raiders would make a good bit of sense for him. He's, again, he's fresh. I think he can run a lot of like the zone concepts that Chip Kelly's probably going to want here. Although he has such a varied run game, it's hard to sort of peg that down. And even still, they can sign Rico Dowdle, and because they have a lot of cap space as well, they can sign Rico Dowdle and still take one of these running backs, like one of the guys from Ohio State that Chip was with last year. They can double dip at that position because I think they're going to want to run the hell out of the ball. And I think Rico, again, he stands out in this free agent market as like, okay, if we don't find the right back in this class or that back is not ready to rock early on, we could get like a starting level output from Rico Dowdle. So that's a spot I think that works for him. Anyone else on this list that you think is interesting here, or is it just kind of these are the guys?
I mean, they're all interesting. I don't want to say
you're so positive. They're all interesting. I'm gonna tell you what, I'm not that interested in Kareem Hunt.
I think the Kansas City Chiefs are going to be interested in Kareem Hunt. I could see a circumstance where Kareem was on the couch once again. And you come back, and again, the entire run game wasn't necessarily productive. I don't think that was just Kareem Hunt's fault. But you just see the offense able to operate with a decent football player in there. And which is to say that about the entire league, where you find that replacement level doesn't really mean replacement level in a lot of situations, right? And so you replace an actual replacement level player in Carson Steele with somebody who can contribute like Kareem Hunt, and you get a bonus there. So it's not that they're disinteresting. It's just at a time right now before free agency and before the draft, like who would we be willing to say like, oh yeah, this is the guy that you want on your team.
Yeah.
I think we've kind of limited to the guys we've talked about, and everybody else is just going to have to find a spot afterwards.
Aaron Jones, I could see going to New York if Aaron Rodgers is there as well. You know, he's another friend of Rodgers. And they need a running. They need some running back help along with Tyron Tracy. So, okay, let's move to wide receivers here. This is an interesting class. Chris Godwin is the headliner now that T. Higgins has been franchised. Amari Cooper's in this group. Stephon Diggs, Hollywood Brown, Elijah Moore, Deontay Johnson after playing for four teams last year. Keenan Allen, DeAndre Hopkins, Darius Slayton. And then, of course, we just got Davante Adams, who was cut. And Cooper Kupp is another cut trade option here. So a lot of names. Patrick Claibon, but if you were to kind of stamp one of these guys as on our tiers here, he has a full tank of gas. He's got a lot to give. Who is that player?
Darius Slayton. I've been saying it for a while, and it's weird when you look at that list of players, but the Giants didn't necessarily want Darius Slayton to be their leading receiver, and other than Malik Nabers, he was the leading receiver almost every year that he was there. And I'm not saying it's a one-for-one Saquon comparison, but the offensive situation for the Giants was bad. It was bad. And there was some modicum of success for Darius Slayton despite that, where I think that it's a projection of growth for a team that has done the evaluation and said, oh, well, he can contribute here. If that landing spot is a place where the passing game doesn't have some kind of major deficiency and he can be a value add. I think it's a value add for him fantasy wise for all of us. And also for the team that's able to get him. Of course, like the star of the class is Devontae is contributing. Devontae is going to be successful. And we're wondering how much Kupp can stay on the field at this point, considering the burden that offense placed on him and how much just like rooting out defensive ends and stuff that he's having to do. Perhaps that gets dialed back and he's able to stay and play on the field a little bit more. But to me, it's just, we haven't seen a lot of talented wide receivers make it to free agency. It's been a while. Like you have to like asterisk Calvin Ridley, even though the Titans were able to sign him. That was a situation where like we didn't necessarily know what was going to happen. And now the Bengals are in an odd position where the salary cap, right, and the franchise tag being a cost control measure within the salary cap have the ability to affect that cost control with one player in T. Higgins. Where they're ultimately trying to sign Jamar Chase, where it's like, okay, well, we've set one number, and so we go back to that other one, and so we don't get a lot of opportunities for like a solid to good wide receiver to actually hit free agency, And so I think that there's a value in Darius Slayton where he's played, he's been healthy, and he's been relatively successful in an offense that hasn't. And that's why he jumps off of that page to me.
Yeah, and he'll be cheap. And Slayton, you said this so perfectly, the Giants are always trying to get rid of Darius Slayton, and they just can't. Like, he's too good for them to get rid of. They're always trying to, you know, elevate. Obviously, Neighbors is different, but let's get Wandell Robinson the ball in these like short areas. Well, again, like Darius Slayton can actually make plays downfield, and he stands out in this receiver class too, because we've got a lot of guys that, you know, are either past 30 and perimeter players, or they're slot heavy players. Keenan Allen, Steph Diggs transitioned to the slot last year, although I think he can still play outside. Chris Godwin, even like Hollywood Brown's a guy you want to use inside out. Elijah Moore's a guy you want to use inside out. Slayton is a pure perimeter player. Yep. And I think teams like Kansas City, who, you know, could use a perimeter player, should be thinking about Darius Slayton. It's not like, okay, we've got to earmark 100 targets for Darius Slayton or something like that. You know, you have Xavier Worthy, you have Rashee Rice whenever he gets on the field, but those guys need role catering. They need manufactured touches. Slayton, again, pure perimeter receiver. He stands out for one of those teams like Kansas City or Detroit, who's kind of looking for one of those, like a true contender, even like a Green Bay, honestly. He's not exactly what Green Bay needs from a man coverage specialist perspective, but still, some of those contenders that need like a proven veteran perimeter option, I think they should be thinking about Darius Slayton.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you've confirmed my priors on that, where it's, okay, if ideally, right, like you talked about Green Bay, somehow get Devontae back. Right. And then this whole like who's the one situation is all resolved.
Yeah, that would be perfect. Right? Yeah,
that would be great for them. But if it's not that, then you add another piece. And I know it's like, oh, well, they get another piece. Like we still don't know who the one is. You just get the talent back where you saw injuries kind of affect that receiving core. We don't know what Christian Watson's status is going to be on down the road, where it's tough to find a team that I'm not looking at Darius Slayton as a potential big value add for them if they have a functional passing game. Because as you mentioned, the number of guys were, again, not saying he is like, you're talking like one alpha, like how many of those guys like exist on planet Earth? Like there's only so many of those guys, but you get a guy that's primarily playing on the outside who can get some separation, especially deep separation. Well, yeah, you want that. It's like a fundamental part of football, and you can get it at a great value.
Yeah, nice wide receiver three for some team. Yeah, I agree. Devontae Adams would make a ton. Devontae Adams, by the way, we're not talking about peak Devontae Adams if we're putting him on the scale here, but he is a lot closer to ready to rock than any of these other perimeter guys last year. Like, I think Chris Godwin's also ready to rock. I mean, Godwin was having his best season last year before the injury, but those two guys, I think, stand out. Like, if we're tiering these free agents, I don't know if you disagree with me, but putting Adams on the scale, he's at a ready to rock level. Godwin on the scale, he's at a ready to rock level. I think those guys among this group are kind of in a tier of their own in terms of the top of the free agent market.
And that's why it's so tough for me to even see Chris Godwin as a free agent, because he's Mr. Buck. Like, I think.
Yeah, I think he's back in Tampa.
Yeah, he's back in Tampa. And so like the designs of having him somewhere else don't even really make sense to my brain, because I can't conceptualize that. So he's going to be back. You know, Jason Light says he's going to be on the Rushmore of Bucks, which is, you know, it feels like we're expanding Rushmore at that point. But it's just
Rushmore itself is probably due for some expansion. Like,
yeah, or maybe just take it back to its original state. That's what I'm
sure. Yeah, we can't have just if we're gonna have any, we can't have just four.
Yeah,
and same thing for these teams. I mean, for the Mount Rushmore, that's four players. And I mean, Chris Godwin's great, but the whole history of the franchise. Like, Mike Evans got to be up there. That's two wide receivers. Yeah.
So you got Mike on there. Derek Brooks, I think, goes on there. Rondé, perhaps Warren. You get in the weeds, and you're all of a sudden you got eight people on that. But I do think, right, the whole point of getting talent is to be able to keep it, right, and celebrate those players. And I think the folks in Tennessee saw, you know, Derrick Henry and AJ Brown have that success. It's like, wow, you know, it would have been nice if we could keep that. And so keep Chris Godwin, you know, keep the good players you have until the wheels fall off, and then have a nice retirement ceremony for them. That's the only way that makes sense. But, you know, we haven't really seen this kind of Devontae incarnation of the wide receiver one that's like a wide receiver for hire. Like we've seen it at cornerback, what Stephon Gilmore has done the past couple of years, like Jadeveon Clowney at edge rusher, where it's like, you know, have talent, will travel one season, like make it happen. And so now Devontae is like creating this niche where, he's got plenty. I think he's got plenty. And the skill set kind of is conducive to the aging process where he's just good. He's just good to an extent that he's better than everybody else in a lot of capacities.
He's still very quarterback friendly. I'm not fully charted out his season yet, but he did so much inside outside. The separation on in breaking routes in the intermediate area is still very high. And I thought he was playing good ball with the Raiders before he got traded. He had that great game against the Ravens when he's just like making 50-50 catches one after the other. And again, I still think there's a lot of that there and the route running's there. So he's a fit for almost anybody that needs like a true. Even if he's not among the five best receivers in football anymore, he's still a clear-cut number one guy who can work inside out. Very valuable skill set. Last guy I just want to ask you about here before we throw it a break, Amari Cooper. Where are we at with Amari Cooper? Because, again, he stands out theoretically in this class where we're talking about a lot of these slot guys that he played X receiver for the Browns and played X receiver for the Bills. But there's a little bit of an asterisk when I say he played X receiver for the Bills, Patrick, because – it was not on the field consistently for the Buffalo Bills last season.
No, and that's a spot where I think teams need to do their research and kind of figure out what exactly was taking place. Was it injury? Was it playbook related? Or was it just the being on a contending football team that had a structure in place and they weren't necessarily, all the pieces weren't exactly aligned to get what they wanted to happen. But when he was there, right, he made one of the plays of the season for Buffalo in terms of just showing that creativity and that ability to make plays and pitching the ball back to Josh. You know, Josh being, an insane person, it helps in making that all happen. But it's, I don't necessarily think we're in that slam dunk category. I think it's more 50-50.
Total 50-50, yeah.
And where it's kind of been 50-50. With Amari in the injuries over the past couple of years. But like I said, when he's there, which is the caveat for every single player in this league, when he's there, what can he do? And we've seen that. And I don't think we've seen a significant decline when he is there.
The thing is, too, I think a lot of people would just immediately put him on E because of what happened last year. And going back and watching and charting some of his season, I think the Browns film was actually good. And he left some plays on the field, you know, drops and stuff like that. That's always cropped up every now and again with Amari Cooper. I get that. But like drops can be overstated. And I think his drops were overstated because, yeah, those were a couple of plays during the first half of the season. Tell me about all the other plays where he was, you know, wide open and completely missed by the quarterback. You know, I had this stat, 52.1% of his air yards were uncatchable when he was with the Cleveland Browns and playing with Deshaun Watson. And then he goes to Buffalo, and I think you hit it on the head there that teams are going to have to do a lot of the work on what was the issue there. Just my personal opinion, charting some of these Bills games, I just think he wasn't on the same page with Josh Allen, and it's hard to just throw a receiver into the mix midstream, especially because that was an offense that was already rotating players. And like he doesn't bring the same skill set as a Matt Collins or a Keon Coleman. And like basically if they were going to have Amari Cooper be a success, you basically have to take Coleman because he's an X for them, which I don't love that usage, but he is their X receiver. You basically would have had to throw your second round pick on the bench if you're going to make Amari Cooper a full-time player. And Amari just wasn't on the same page with Josh on scramble drills, which is a key part of being a Bills receiver. He also just wasn't always at the right route depth. And that's stuff that, along with injuries, obviously, can be fixed if he's healthy and if he's fully integrated with the team from the offseason on. So I'm not all the way in on Amari Cooper. I do think he is 50-50. I could see this one going either way. But I'm a little bit more interested in him as kind of a reclamation ad than I was probably a few weeks ago.
Yeah, and that's it's really just in terms of evaluating the outcomes. We have to evaluate the things that came before that. Like, why would the Buffalo Bills be willing to stunt the development of their rookie wide receiver during this playoff run that they were already in? By the way, like, this was a very good team that was trying to get that much better. And as, you know, part of that, probably Amari dealing with being a little banged up at that point in the season, there was the hand and wrist injury that I think they both had simultaneously as well. And so it's like, are we willing to sacrifice that for this? I think that was a significant part of it. But also, you know, the player, like, is this player going to be a part of what we're doing long term? It seems like that's clearly not. And so that's how you got the outcome that was last season. And so you bring him in, the workout's good. The things work with your particular team. I think Amari Cooper can function.
Yeah. We're going to throw it a break, but I do just want to get this on the record too. Like, Elijah Moore, 25 years old. I would take, he not had a clean career. He's not met my expectations, but he's somebody I would at least try to be like, let's see where he can fit with a team. Like, I don't know, Tennessee, something like that. Okay. Let's throw it a break. We come back. We'll quickly run through tight ends and offensive linemen right after this. All right, we're back. Claybon, I got four tight ends here.
Okay.
Mike Gesicki, Juwan Johnson, Zach Ertz, Tommy Tremble. Not a great class of tight ends. The only thing I'll say about this is I have found it interesting that every time Joe Burrow talks about, like, I want my guys here, he groups Mike Gesicki in that. Like, he's got his buddy Jamar Chase, who's played with since college. He's got T. Higgins, who's played every single NFL season with. And then, like, oh, by the way, he just sticks Mike Gesicki on the end of that list. So, I guess Mike Gesicki is going to be back with the Bengals. If not, it'll just be yet another reason people are on is Joe Burrow pissed off watch.
Well, in terms of evaluating the front office decisions, right, for the Bengals, I don't think Mike Gesicki is going to break the bank. And so if we can make Joe happy.
We can get that one done quickly.
Yeah, if we can make Joe happy in that aspect, then yeah, because it was a good run for Mike Gesicki in 2024 with the Bengals. So why not? Why not have him back where you've been looking for this kind of landing spot for Mike Gesicki his whole career? Right? And so you finally found it. Why not lean into that and just stick with it? So him being back in Cincinnati just makes the most sense to me.
Yeah, I've never seen the show Pawn Stars, but I do like the meme, you know, where it's like,
have you not seen Pawn Stars, by the way?
You sitting down and watch, I mean, you sitting down and like watching episodes of Pawn Stars?
Yeah, you see Pawn Stars by accident. Just like,
okay, well, that doesn't count. Okay, let me say that again. I've never everything I've seen of Pawn Stars has been against my will. Okay, I've never sought out an episode of Pawn Stars, but okay. I do like the meme, you know, where it's like, mm-hmm. Best I can do is this. That is basically the, and it's great to explain a meme on the podcast, but that is basically this situation here. It's like, oh, Joe, you wanted contract extensions for Jamar Chase and T. Higgins? Best we can do is resign a Mike Gesicki. it's better than nothing. All right, Joe, let's count your blessings here. I also think Zach Ertz going back to the Commanders makes a lot of sense. And other than that, not a lot of needle moves from this tight end position. We're mostly going to get those from the draft, even though the combine performers at the draft, people are a little skeptical of that, but there's a lot of good, like Tyler Warren, Colson Loveland, these guys, yeah. That's who we're interested in terms of like needle movers at tight end, not in this free agency class. Last thing here, Claybon, offensive line class here. Ronnie Stanley, Dan Moore, Morgan Moses, Tyron Smith, Cam Robinson, Jedrick Wills, those are your tackles. Although I think Wills is a guy who can maybe move to right tackle or move inside to guard with his next team. Will Fries, Mekhi Becton, Patrick McCary, Tevin Jenkins, Ben Bredesen, Kevin Zeitler are your guards. Drew Dahlman, Josh Myers, and Ryan Kelly are your centers. Am I crazy? Or is this like a, I think this is a pretty decent group. Like there's one star power player in Ronnie Stanley who could just go back to Baltimore. I think nobody would be surprised about that. If I was Baltimore, I'd be trying to get him back in the mix ASAP. And he was great last year, even if I know there are people in the league that are a little concerned with his kind of injury history, stuff like that. But if I'm a team like the Patriots that you said earlier in this podcast needs a all new starting five, or at the very least, like, again, let's figure out what Michael and Wenwu's doing and leave him at that position, never move him again. And then we got four spots to figure out here. You're not doing all four in the draft. I'd feel pretty good about like, hey, I can get multiple, let's call it competent starters from this group.
Yeah, no, it's, and it's at positions where you've seen teams being having to make sacrifices to try to fix, like the Carolina Panthers having to fix their interior in one run of free agency, and they did it. Like that was successful, mission accomplished.
Where, and nobody, by the way, nobody last year was like, oh, Robert Hunt is a premier player in the open market. People were laughing at that $100 million. Robert Hunt, $100 million? You see him like, and he was the team MVP last year on offense.
It makes too much sense when it's like, okay, well, we have a position that of need and we have money available. Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you spend on the interior offensive line? Because I think it gets shifted into that spot where it's like, oh yeah, you just throw somebody in on the interior. You take a failed tackle and move them there, and all of a sudden they're success. But these are positions of value, right? Where we saw Mekhi Becton finally be in a circumstance where he could contribute and lifted his value. It's going to be tough to not imagine him back in Philadelphia, given all the things that have transpired, and perhaps they're able to get something done there. But guys that have done nothing but contribute their whole careers, like Cam Robinson, where the Vikings season, I know we talked about the way that it ended, but they're not even in position to have that season end the way that it did if they're not able to make that trade after Christian Darrisaw goes down and have Cam Robinson play at left tackle, right? In a brand new offense with a brand new team. And so there's this group in free agency that can work for somebody with the cap going up. I think we may be surprised what some of the line numbers are looking like after free agency is over. I think there's going to be some heavy money spent.
Yeah, and I would just attack multiple. Like Ben Bredesen was good last year for the Bucks. You know, he was, and again, another under the radar free agent signing for them who gave them a really good year on the interior. Drew Dahlman might not be one of the best centers in the league, but if you're a team like Chicago that has a young quarterback, you're trying to get that guy rolling. You've already got Jonah Jackson, who has played center and guard, but he's probably best as a guard. You need, like, again, you need to spend the cap space. You need to get competent on the offensive line. Now they might run a little more gap stuff than the Falcons did, who are, they're a pure zone team. But you know, again, I think you can't really go wrong with maybe plucking multiple guys if you're a team like the Patriots or the Bears that just needs to remake that offensive line here. We're going to end the show with one wild free agent prediction, or one just offseason prediction. But before we do that, I just got to share one piece of news with you, Claybon. And this is going to tie back to the running back discussion that we had earlier. The Eagles, according to Adam Schefter, are rewarding Saquon Barkley with a 2-year, $41.2 million contract extension that makes him the highest paid running back in NFL history. It also makes him the first $20 million per year running back. Rare move to give a guy an extension 1 year into a 3-year deal. The smartest GM in the sport, Claybon, has, per everybody that has a brain in the NFL media space, has now invested in the running back position twice in a row here with big time money. So running backs are back.
Yes, as long as those running backs are actually, because the generational tag gets thrown around a lot. If you have a really good running back, quarterback, wide receiver, yeah, you should pay them and pay them early. And hopefully people follow suit. And this idea that's like, oh, well, you don't need to be good at position X to win. Realize that all of these guys have different skill sets, different talent. We're in different eras where, you just have to have something that nobody else has, and then you figure out the best way to utilize that. If you're going to win the Super Bowl, you're going to have to do it differently than another team because you have different players and different circumstances. And I think Howie recognizes that, having done it with multiple groups now. And yeah, he's good at the obvious. Saquon Barkley is very good, and he deserves to be paid as though he's very good. So I'm glad. I'm glad that we've come to this point, considering where things were just a few years ago, with the same player. Which kind of highlights how silly it was that Saquon and Derek and Josh weren't getting paid what they should have been paid at the time.
All right, let's end this show with one prediction from each of us. It can be trade. It can be like a free agent signing destination. Let's call some shots here, Patrick Claybon. I've got one, but as the guest, I'm going to let you go first.
Oh, you're going to allow me the opportunity. Well, it's... I've said it early on in the process. I've said it multiple times in this show. I think Kirk Cousins will be the quarterback of the Cleveland Browns in 2025. And it will ultimately result in regime change. I think it'll be the last the last season for Kevin Stefanski, former coach of the year of the Cleveland Browns. There will be a moment where Kirk Cousins is playing and playing well. It's just not going to end up the way the Browns would like it to do.
Pretty much a no-win situation for Kevin Stefanski there. The best thing here is I can sign Kirk Cousins, who I had success with. We were talking about it was so long ago. We were doing TV together in 2018. That's about is that the last time that Kevin and Kirk had success together? Was in that 2018 season, or actually might have been a few years after that. I think it was a few years after that. It was a few years after that. Anyways, whatever. Point being, it's been a minute, so that's the best hope that he has. And per Patrick Claibon, it's not gonna work out. I'll actually stay in the AFC North here. I think the Steelers trade George Pickens this offseason. And by the way, tough for our guy Justin Fields, because it sounds like the Steelers are probably going to re-sign Fields, not Russell Wilson. I have no idea where Russ ends up after that, which is why I didn't bring him up in the free agent discussion there. I think they re-sign Fields, which is probably the first time in NFL history, Claibon, that a quarterback has been traded for, benched, and then brought back as the starter the next year. I don't think that's ever happened, but I think that's what's going to happen. And then I think at some point along the way this offseason, they're trading George Pickens. I don't think they want to give him a contract extension. I think there's some tension there. Let's just put it that way. And I actually think that George Pickens' skill set as a true X receiver who can beat press coverage is valuable enough that some team is going to look at him and say, hey, last year of his rookie deal, maybe send a third to the Pittsburgh Steelers, and I think they'll be ready and willing to wash their hands. I don't know what the hell they're going to do at wide receiver after George Pickens, but I think before the draft, by the time the NFL draft is over, I don't think he's on this roster anymore.
Is he that much of a problem where you could be looking at the compensatory third if he leaves after the season anyway, right? Is he that much of a problem where it's like, hey, let's be bad, right? Let's be actually bad. Because the only times the offense looked good in the passing game was George Pickens doing something. So, like, they would be
actively
bad.
But then there's other times, and this is what when he's doing something, not what he's supposed to be doing,
at least
the offense
watching.
Looks really bad. So I don't know, man. I think if you're there with the cap guys, the Steelers, you got to be doing like the equation of, all right, how can we do another season where it's a totally clean, no weird like motivation stuff, whatever. We get a whole season out of him and then we get that third round compensatory, or can we not risk that? I don't know. That is what, just again, not my opinion. That's what I think they're going to be doing in the front office there.
It depends on the offers because there's only so many of those guys that can play on the outside and get the kind of separation and make the kind of play at the catch point that George Pickens can. And so if you believe in your staff and you believe in the team and the structure, why wouldn't you? You know, at least take a shot at it.
And good luck to Justin Fields again. I said if the Steelers bring back Justin Fields, they have to like make the wide receiver core a strength. You're going in the opposite direction if you do that, but I kind of think it's going to happen.
Hey, Justin, congratulations. Here's Van Jefferson, your wide receiver one. But like, let's do that. No.
Terrific. Not what you want. Okay, that is going to do it for today's show. Patrick Claibon, appreciate you, man. You've done it all. You've said it all. Tell the people where they can find you, what you're working on right now.
Yeah, hit me up on Blue Sky. It's at Patrick Claibon. Also, we've got a couple of specialty shows coming up. We're going to recap free agency on Fantasy Live here in the next month, once that gets going. And we're also going to do the same on Game Day View, where we give a little bit of the betting outlook for 2025. And also, you know, any of the iterations of, you know, NFL Now, which was what NFL Up to the Minute became. You know, they've since been axed. But fun fact, the show that replaced NFL Now, The Insiders, hosted by our insiders, I'm going to be filling in. I am decidedly not an insider. And when I do that, it's going to look a whole lot like NFL Now and NFL Up to the Minute. So we got that coming up in the next week as well.
It all comes full circle. I mean, look at that. You're on a fantasy show. You're doing betting. You're doing NFL Daily with Greg. You're on the insiders. Patrick Claibon is a virtuoso of the NFL Network. You can... Next contract negotiation, you can slide that across the table. Virtuoso.
Yeah, just write virtuoso In fact, I won't have anything else on the paper. I'll just write virtuoso in my categorically horrible handwriting. It looks like a six-year-old.
No, you're doing better than me. All right. Appreciate you again, Claybon. This was absolutely fantastic. We are going to be back on Thursday with Andy Behrens. We've talked about the free agents on this show. Next show, we're going to talk about maybe some of the spots that we want these free agents to land in, some spots that, again, they could be trades, they can be like even draft picks coming up. We talked players. We'll talk destination on the next show. That is coming up on Thursday. But for now, we are out.